Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times best-selling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Hey everyone, Kevin Cruz here. Great to have you back. And before we start this episode, I just have to say, if you still don't know what LeadX is, just grab your smartphone, head on over to your favorite app store, Android or iOS, and download the LeadX app, L-E-A-D-X. Tons of great professional development to help you to achieve your full career potential. We've got micro-learning videos, book summaries, webinars, curated podcasts, my favorite episodes, personality assessments, and more. And if you really want to help me out, you got to tell your VP of HR or your head of leadership development that every single leader in your organization should have this app so they can become great leaders and maximize employee engagement in your organization. Now, today I speak to the great entrepreneur, Donald Miller. We've had him on the show before. I've been on his show. Really love the stuff he's done in the past. You might know him from his book, Building a Story Brand. And he's here with a new book called Business Made Simple. And he and I also chat about growing up without much money, what that does to our money mindset and self-esteem. And we even talk about one of my favorite subjects, goal setting. Enjoy the episode. Hey, so Don, I'm going to talk to you about your new book in a minute, but I got all these selfish questions I want to hit you with. I like to take care of my selfish stuff first.
I only have 2 hours and 15 minutes, so.
You got more than me.
Today's an easy day.
So I've, of course, for years just been so envious of your book success and all kinds of stuff. I'm always envious of the publishers that you get. But I just learned something. I'm like, oh my gosh, yet another thing to be envious of. You have a secret door to your office, don't you?
Yeah, I do. So right there, there's a door. And then there's a bookshelf that goes out to the garage. So I'm behind a bookshelf. Now, the only problem is, I went through all this expense of creating a secret bookshelf door, and then I put it on Instagram. I can't keep a secret. I love it so much. This is concrete. This whole thing is just the ceiling is concrete, and it's just the back of the garage. And I wondered without a window whether I could get any work done. And it's just like going to Mars. I mean, it's like flying first class overseas. You get that same amount of work done. It's amazing.
That is amazing. You know, it's funny that we do have that in common. So I'm in a basement office, and it wasn't planned this way, but there's there's like an extension, of the basement. So it's concrete walls on three sides. And when I decided to turn it into an office, I even said, now this is weird. I'm not usually like paranoid, but I'm like, you know, I could turn that into kind of like a safe room, like a bunker. So instead of doing a drywall to close it off in my basement, I'm going to have them put in some reinforced wood wall. And then I'm thinking, and I'm going to be a podcaster, so I need to make it soundproof. So it's like all insulated really well. It's really quiet, but there's no window, right? So there's no window. And I had the same thing. I'm like, and most people think that's crazy because I spend a lot of time in my office. I spend a lot of time. And I wasn't sure about that. And I mean, it's been, I don't know, 5-6 years, and I love it. I mean, it's soundproof. There's no distractions.
Yeah.
And hey, even if it's a sunny day, I'm missing it. I don't remember once I'm down here.
I'm the same way. And it's funny because, you know, I've got a digital studio upstairs, and we're building a barn with an office on top of it. Mm. And so my wife was like, what in the world? You have an office at the office. You have an office at the barn. Why are we... And I'm like, honey, it's a safe room. And then she let me do it.
Of course, my safe room has no food or water.
Right. Yeah, there's no hold on. I got to show you something. You're going to love this. You know, they built this thing and it's got this bookshelf in the background. But Kevin, watch.
Oh, my gosh. This is so cool. There's like a secret panel in the back wall.
I had them stick a gun safe back there, but I don't have any guns, so they're just water pistols. So I take the kids back and have them pick a water pistol.
See, you're like Batman. You know, you got your secret lair, all your secret compartments.
This is what happens when you grow up poor and you suddenly have money. This is what you have. This is what happens.
Okay.
No, so, no taste, no class, just gun safes in a bunker.
Bunkers without the survival gear.
That's exactly it.
Okay, Don, you just stumbled on something I was actually going to – I was going to get to in a few minutes. Let me just go there. On page 9, you revealed a little bit more in this book than I knew about you before and that I've heard you talk about. And like this one paragraph – so this is you writing. Personally, I grew up poor. I spent my early childhood in government housing. Our family stood in line for government cheese. And you went on to talk about, you know, a pretty rough upbringing. I grew up, I would say, lower middle class, not quite the way you had it. And I did want to ask, because you've had this life of entrepreneurship and obviously, you know, considerable success. I mean, how did growing up like that shape like your money mindset, your career mindset, to the point where you're at today?
I think it dramatically benefited me in the long haul. Now, there were problems in the sense that we, you know, I made terrible grades because one, I chose to, I guess, if I want to take full responsibility for that. But also, mom had to work till 7 p.m. So we were latchkey kids. We had a key around our neck, and I walked home about, you know, 2 or 3 miles from school, and then, you know, she wasn't there. So my sister and I are kind of just raising ourselves, you know, and, you know, just developed really bad habits out of that. And so did not really, apply myself academically. So I understand, that, you know, while everybody has the same opportunity in America, not everybody starts in the same place or has the same help. And so I have an empathy and a compassion for folks who grew up the way I did. However, you know, I was wired as an Enneagram 3 from the beginning. I get my identity from succeeding. And when you're wired that way, you've got a really good shot. And so, that applied itself to literature at first. I started reading after I graduated from high school. I decided I wanted to be an author. I just lucked into an entry-level job at a publishing company, discovered that I was really good at business, and ended up becoming president of that company in my mid-20s, and then wrote a book at night. That book, my mother bought 10 copies, and she was the only one. And then the next book ended up on the New York Times bestsellers list for about 40 weeks. But, you know, by that time, Kevin, I'm 30 years old. So my mother never made a living wage. I never made a living wage until I was president of a publishing company. It was a little publishing company, so I made a little bit of money for 1 year before I left to start a writing career that didn't turn out super well for another couple of years. So essentially, you know, I lived in very lower middle class, if not beneath that, levels of economic, you know, situation there. And then I had a book take off on the New York Times. And so I was 30 before I ever had any money.
Yeah.
And what that did to me was it made me extremely wise with money, because I knew, and some people had told me, hey, when this happens to a book, you got to know it doesn't happen again. And that's proven true. I sold 1.2 or 3 million of those books. And the only book I've ever sold more, anywhere near that would be half that, 500,000. So, you know, I was smart. I paid off a small house. I didn't have any debt. I still to this day have never owned a credit card. And I'm always convinced that, you know, you got to have 5 years worth of food money in the bank. So I just made really strong, good economic decisions and didn't over leverage myself. So I think that helps. And then the other thing that really helped me, and I think probably a lot of your listeners can identify with this, you know, I'll confess to everybody, I had a chip on my shoulder. Yeah. I really wanted to prove to the world, and this is a very terrible term, but I'm going to use it because I'm talking about the way I felt about myself. I wanted to prove to the world that I wasn't white trash.
Yep.
And, you know, I know that people thought about me that way when I was a kid, because we couldn't afford nice clothes. My mother sewed a lot of my clothes because I monitored my own health. I was a fat kid, you know, and had a crush on the homecoming queen. It was like a John Hughes movie, you know, it's like, but I was like the loser.
Which are the best movies.
They are the best movies, unless you're like the loser character. And so, and I'm still that guy, you know, at least I'm self-aware about it, but at the same time, I think there's an upside to that, because I hitched my wagon, if you will, to that chip on my shoulder, and it's helped me become really, really successful. You know, a lot of determination, a lot of hard work, and quite honestly, a lot of luck later. And I discovered I'm a pretty good business guy.
There's so much stuff that you're triggering in me with your story. Yeah. I appreciate you sharing it. You know, I tell my kids, I'm 53 years old, so you're born in 67, raised in the 70s. And I didn't know, I still don't really know if it was a socioeconomic thing or if it was like in the 70s, parents treated their kids like the dogs, you know, like come let them out, you know, let them outside for a while.
That is so true.
But, you know, I can remember from pretty much age 7 on, both my parents worked. And so it didn't really matter whether it was summer or school. You know, I'd wake up whenever I'd wake up. And there would be no parents in the house. So right. I would get myself ready to either go out and play if it was a summer or go to school, walk to school, come home from school. There's still nobody in the house. They come home and in my situation, they would come home and have dinner. We'd eat dinner in front of the TV on TV trays. Yeah. And then it was get out of the house and we don't want to see you till it's time to go to bed or go do your own thing. And my sisters, unfortunately, I have two older sisters and they're great now, but I mean, they didn't finish high school. They were runaway. I mean, they got into a lot of bad stuff and yeah. I got into a lot of bad stuff and just didn't get caught. But it was a crazy thing. And I think that, you know, I ended up being the first kid to, you know, work my way through college. I went to State College and started companies. But I sort of feel like you never really lose that identity of not having money. And there's a good side, but I also think there's a bad side to that. And as you said, it was great. You went right there. I don't think I was probably age 40 before I realized, a lot of my career is really just for external validation. All of this stuff has been because I don't ever want to not have money. You know, I want to be financially secure. And I really liked the external validation. Yeah. And I only really started changing my why once I owned it and understood it, but it took me 4 decades.
I'm 100% with you there. But I also think, you know, that achieving some success and getting some external validation, it's also satisfying to me. And, you know, I think there are people who are wired where they're almost gluttons in that regard. Mm. Yeah. I kind of feel like everything else pretty much from here on out is icing on the cake.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think life owes me anything more. Now I'd be an idiot not to go get more because it's really fun. It's a great way to spend your life. It's impactful. If you're charitable, it helps a lot of people. If you have a platform, you can actually leverage that to help a lot of the other people succeed. So I'm going to keep trying to succeed, but I don't feel like I really have to. And I think there is a journey in which you can get some healing from those wounds. And I feel like I've been lucky to experience some of that healing as well.
Yeah, it's a great way to put it. It's sort of like before I had the realization, when I would do things, it's almost like I was running from a lion or something. Like it's like you gotta outrun the lion.
Man,
once you kind of have enough and you get it, then it's like, oh no, I'm hiking up the mountain because it's fun and the view is great and
there you go.
Meeting all kinds of people on the journey. It's a whole different motivation.
It is. And you use the exact analogy that somebody said, what's it like being an Enneagram 3? And I said, it's like being chased by a tiger.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're out of bed quick and you're focused and you know exactly what you need to get done that day because that tiger's going to eat you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that tiger's called failure.
Yeah.
And it's always chasing you. And, you know, I still feel that way to some degree, but it's 10, 15% of what it used to be.
Yeah. Once you see it like plainly, then it's not as.
No, the tiger can't get to you anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not the same power.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what I thought I was going to open with is this was very cool. So like on page 7, I'm just geeking out because you write in his book, High Output Management, Andrew Grove, former CEO at Intel, said, as a general rule, you have to accept that no matter where you work, you are not an employee. You are in a business with one employee, yourself. And the first part of that is how great is high output management? And nobody reads it. Nobody knows it. So I was impressed that you did.
Andrew Grove is one of my favorites. And I like how unbelievably practical he is. It's obvious why he has been such a great success. That's a great book and it should be read by every manager.
Yeah. Yeah. And the point here, and I wanted to bring it up early in the interview because your book again, Business Made Simple, 60 Days to Master Leadership, Sales, Marketing, Execution, Management, Personal Productivity, and more. The first point I want to make is to my listeners, this isn't a book only for someone who's running a small business, as an example. It's not someone who's in I don't want anybody out there to think, yeah, but I'm not a marketing person. I'm not in sales. that opening explains, oh, we're all in business, whether we realize it or not, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, the way I look at it is there's a number floating above everybody's head, and that number is what you're worth on the open market. And that sounds like a terrible thing to say. And it certainly isn't true the way I believe God views you. Hopefully your spouse views you, your kids, and even the way you should view yourself. But you're kidding yourself if you don't understand that's the way the market views you. And ultimately, we will all agree with that. You know, if you are capable of cutting up some potatoes and dropping them into some hot grease for 3 minutes and then pulling them out, you can make French fries. So, you know, you're going to be worth about $15 an hour. And a lot of people are because they're young. They're just out of high school. They don't have any experience. But you take that same person and you teach them to unify a team around some aligning principles like a mission statement, a story pitch, a theme, values, critical actions. They're going to get a team on the same page, rowing at the same pace. That person is not worth $15 an hour. They're worth $30 an hour somewhere in middle management, and that may be enough to get them into management, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. But then you actually take that same person, you say, well, here's how to give a really good speech. I mean, really to knock the house down, and here's a formula for doing that. So you can roll out both internal and external information to employees or stakeholders. Well, now they're on the fast track, certainly to middle management. They're worth $30 or $40 an hour. You teach that person how to understand business strategy, how to protect cash flow, how marketing and sales have to work together, the four or five ways that you actually decrease overhead, how to watch and manage cash flow and move money around so you never run out of cash, even if there's a global pandemic. That person is not qualified to be the CEO. If they understand clarifying messages, if they understand marketing, if they understand negotiation, if they understand management and execution, you know, you're talking about $250 an hour that they're worth. The beautiful thing about understanding that you have an economic worth is that you're actually in control of it.
Yeah.
When you're not in control of your economic worth, it's the most offensive idea in the world. And so I wrote this book to give everybody control of their economic worth. And I run a company. I have 28 employees. They all understand this. They all understand that if you go and develop skills that make my company money, you now have leverage to use against me. And I'll tell them that.
Yeah.
I'll say, look, if you can prove that you, and without you, I wouldn't have made $1 million this year, you better know you can bring that up in our next salary negotiation. And you better know also that you just became worth a lot more on the open market. And now I need to pay you more in order to keep you, which I'm perfectly willing to do because you're a great investment. Now, there are times when I have a conversation, they say, Don, I'm capable. I brought in $1 million to the company, and I'll sit there and I'll say, well, actually, I don't think you did. I think you corrected some of the grammar in the sales letter that somebody else wrote about the product that I made with the sales revenue. I think you contributed to a team, but let's get really honest about what you're actually worth. And we have those conversations all of the time. So some of my favorite meetings I've ever had, just had this last year with a person who's our marketing director, and I hope he doesn't mind me sharing this story. You know, about 3 months before raises were handled out, we do a bonus structure based on whether we hit certain metrics. We pulled them aside and, you know, said, look, we want to give you what amounted to about a 15% raise. And then we're going to pretend that you made this kind of money all year so that when your year end bonus happens, it's actually a percentage of this higher number.
Mm.
You know, and he said, thanks. And we did this with another guy, and that guy called me and said, Don, you're so generous. And I stopped him. I said, listen, you know, I hope I'm generous. You know, Betsy and I give a lot of money to charity. You know, I know that I'm generous, but you got to understand something. This isn't generosity. This is me competing to keep you.
That's right.
And to me, the self-esteem of my whole team goes up. And I think it's the opposite mentality that so many owners have. They don't want their team to know what they're worth because they don't want to pay them. And I'm sitting there going, listen, I want my team to know that they're a stock in the stock exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And if they give shareholders a big return, I'll invest more in them. Now, we may have to have some tough conversations about what you're really worth, because a lot of people think they're worth more than they are. And a lot of bosses think they're paying people, more than they should be paying them. We got to find some sort of middle ground. But to me, those are fun negotiations, just like if I ran an NFL or an NBA team. Right. I'm looking for rock star talent. And if you're selling a bunch of T-shirts in the stands, you better believe I'm going to pay you more. And if you're not, you better believe you're not worth it. So you better take control of your own career and become worth something if you want to stay here. I think those honest conversations are really fantastic.
I remember reading something similar in a couple of the books that are out about Netflix and Netflix culture, where they encourage their people, like, you know what, if you think you're underpaid, go job interview a few places and tell us what those offers are.
Absolutely.
And you could be right, and we'll match them or do better.
We will have the honest conversations, because the reality is you can't lie about a stock price.
Right.
It is what it is. Now, the problem is the number floating above your head is invisible. So we're having an interesting conversation. But I just love the leverage that's handed to the labor pool.
Yeah.
When you say take, you know, you weren't born with a number above your head.
Yeah.
You know, that's something you change. And if anybody works for me, I want that number increasing year after year after year, because if it does, that's a stock I can double down on and invest in.
And just one last point on this value as a, you know, in terms of a business value, it's easier than ever before to get an understanding of what your fair market value is. I mean, when we were coming up, you know, there was no pay scale and Glassdoor and Indeed or LinkedIn salaries. And we were told, like, you never talk about your salary. It was like taboo, right? You know, don't talk about money. These days, 20-something-year-olds, they tell each other salaries all the time. And I think it's a good thing. Like,
I do too.
The transparency is good. It's good to get inequities out of the system and all that. Guy who worked for me, he worked for me for a couple of decades, really close. And he said something that sounded harsh, but it was kind of true. He said, when Kevin sees you coming down the hallway, he sees a number on your forehead. Now, that's not exactly true. It's a little harsh. But what he was getting at is this thing is, you know, he like a stock, like an investment. He knows what the organization is investing in you for the year. And he knows, or he has an idea in his head, whether you're providing a multiple on that or not.
Well, and I love those conversations where somebody will come to me and say, hey, Don, you talk about a number floating above somebody's head. I work for you. What are my opportunities to make this number grow?
Right.
You know, and I'll say something like, hey, you know, when you spent half a day planning an all team lunch, I just want you to know that's a $35,000 a year job.
Yeah.
And so don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
I want you instead be strategizing ways that we can use webinars or live Q&A sales calls to reach more people to close more deals.
Yep.
I'll pay you more for that. But I'm so glad you show up on time. I'm so glad you have a great attitude. But the all staff lunch did not make us $300,000.
Yep.
And so think that way.
Yeah, that right there is a huge gift to everyone listening, whether you're self-employed or not. What are you being paid, or what do you think you should be paid? And think about your day. Go back on your calendar for the last 7 days. How many hours were spent doing that level of work? And I'm pointing the finger at myself, Don. How often am I doing my own admin work? Because, oh, it's easier if I do it.
Yeah,
It's wrong, but it's a struggle. It's still a struggle.
It is a struggle for all of us, I think. But, you know, you sit down, you say, what are my highest return opportunities? And I'm the CEO of the company. I still take out the garbage. I'm not saying like that, you know, this isn't my job or that's beneath me, but you've literally got to think like an entrepreneur that owns their own company, because ultimately Andrew Grover is right. We do own our own company, and that company is you.
That's right.
And if that company makes, you know, I have a deal where, if, you know, you can hire me for a day, and I do it maybe 4 or 5 times a year. A company will hire me, or an individual hire me, and I will work on their marketing and messaging strategy. Mm-hmm. And what I tell them is, okay, it's a lot of money. You have to fly to Nashville. We will spend one day together, and then I'll answer emails where I will look at the work that you've done and I'll critique it. That's the deal. And I say, now here's the other deal. It's X amount of money. If I don't make you 10x return on your investment, you just call me. It's an honor system. I'll write you a check for every penny you paid me.
Yep.
Because and they'll go, wow, you know, are you that good? I'm like, I don't know if I'm that good. We've never missed. You know, sometimes we've tweaked it because they didn't want their money back. They would just say, hey, let's tweak it and make it work better. And I'm great with that. But it would give me a, it would be, give me great pleasure and joy to write you a check back, because what I'm essentially doing is giving you your money back. So you will never say Don was a bad investment. One thing I never, ever want to happen is for anybody to say Donald Miller was a bad investment, because the number above my head goes down.
Yeah.
So if I can't get it done, I'm giving you your money back. And to me, that's the way I want. I have to do that as the CEO of the company. I have to do that with all of our customers. I want every employee also to think that way. You know, if I'm getting a paycheck, I want the company getting a 10x return on their investment in me. And the thing is, let's say they get a 20x return. Well, that's leverage for me to negotiate my next raise.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And before we go even more deeper into the content, I want to point something out. So, you know, I read again, you know, this title, you know, 60 Days to Master Leadership, Sales, etc. But this isn't just a book. I had to read it twice, because for the price of a book, you're getting 60 educational videos with this. I mean, it's like an entire course. Like, how'd you come up with this idea?
Well, I built a company that was $0, and about 5 years later, we made $16.5 million. And this year we'll make 20. Wow. And we're going straight to 100 as fast as we possibly can. And I never went to college. You know, I studied humanities at Reed College in Portland, Oregon. I audited some classes. I got a scholarship out of high school to play tuba at a community college. I mean, that's nothing in there that would resemble a business education. It was great for my writing career. So I was shocked that business came easily to me. And part of the gift that I have is that I just have to simplify everything so that I can understand it. And then what the gift of that is being able to turn around and say, hey, let me translate what they're saying. And so as we started a business, I realized, well, the first thing I've got to do is create a mission statement so that I can align my team. The second thing I've got to do is create some sort of messaging around this product so that customers can understand why they need to buy it. The third thing I need to do is create a sales funnel. The fourth thing I need to do is create some sales scripts and hire a sales team. You know, the fifth thing I need to do, and so on and so on. And so I just made a list of everything that I had to figure out to get from zero to 16.5 million in just 5 years. And then I looked at the Vanderbilt University is teaching our marketing curriculum and their MBA course. And Vanderbilt's executive MBA course studied my company as a case study. So I got to understand a little bit of what MBA students were getting. And when I looked at it, I just said to myself, none of this would make me want to hire you. I mean, I'm so glad that you read a white paper on trade with China and you studied a 1973 Volkswagen ad. None of that is going to make me money. And so I turned around and said, okay, well, I'm going to create an MBA program that costs right now on Amazon about $15.
Incredible.
It's just no college debt. But I realized, look, some people finish books, some people don't. I'm obsessed with people getting – if I'm going to spend, you know, 500 hours writing this book, I want people to actually understand what I'm saying. Well, not everybody has the time, especially these days, to sit and read a book. So I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to break it into 60 daily readings, and then I'm going to say the same basic thing but elaborate a little bit in an educational video. And that video ended up, those videos, you know, we spent a couple $100,000. There's animated parts to them. It's called micro learning. They're 5 to 10 minutes, but it's one concept per video, hopefully presented in a such a way that you'll never forget it. And then, you know, it's part of just being an entrepreneur is you have to be obsessed about value. So I thought, okay, for $15, you get 60 daily entries that teach you all the basic core disciplines that any professional who wants to climb the ladder should know. We're going to put 60 videos with it, so you'll actually retain the information. And to me, I thought, if they can't get a 10x return on a $15 investment when you give them that, they shouldn't be in business anyway. So that was the idea behind it.
It just blew my mind because, again, the value there. And so for people who are listening, first of all, if you're a reader, great, great book. You should read it. And hope you've read Don's other books. If you don't think you're a reader, though, as you said, you've chunked it. These are short daily lessons. It's almost like a daily devotional to become better at the business stuff. And really clearly written. But then even in this day and age of you know, used to be say Twitter, now it's TikTok or whatever. It's a daily video, one video a day that's going to encourage a career. And Don, you've talked about this 10X idea without it even being specifically about 10X. But of course, if you spend $15 and you get all of this high quality video training, I mean, that's an incredible value. And if you think about like what people pay to get less of an education, perhaps in a lot of MBAs, I mean, it's just a no-brainer.
No? That's part of the mission of Business Made Simple, both this book and the company is, you know, here's the reality about what's happening to the middle class right now. The middle class is being kicked in the shins, kicked in the nuts, and then kicked in the head. Right. So basically what's happening is you grow up, you're convinced because the system has convinced you and because corporations have bought into it that you've got to get a degree to get a good job. Mm-hmm. So you get a degree. The only thing that the degree is going to get you is actually an interview because you don't remember anything that you learned. It's going to get you an interview and then hopefully you'll get a job. But then you have so much college debt that now that you're making a great income, you cannot go buy a house because you have too much debt. So what that did to our parents' generation and certainly my generation is it delayed the purchase of a home, which is where most American middle class folks store their wealth. Well, if you delay that 10 or 15 years, all the equity that you would have built up in that house is gone. So now you bought it and you're starting your payment. 15 years into those payments, you start accumulating medical debt and medical bills because the whole medical system in America is screwing us.
Yep.
And I am not for socialized medicine. Don't react to this, but it's really screwing us. And then we are also screwed in the tax code. If you're an entrepreneur, I pay 39% in taxes. My buddies who are hedge fund managers, they pay 11%, but only on what they spend. So they effectively pay 4% in taxes. So we have a tax code that's screwing us, a medical system that's screwing us, and a university system that's screwing us. I can't do anything about the medical system right now. I can't do anything about the tax code, but I can do something about the university system. And what I'm asking all corporations to do is look, if they've read Business Made Simple and they've gone through the videos and you can give them an assessment to make sure they understand these concepts and you are willing to give them a year to practice these concepts,
right.
I'm telling you, they will be better than a Harvard grad in most professional scenarios. And it's $15.
Right.
So Amazon is already saying you don't need a bachelor's degree. Google is saying not only do you not need one, we have a six-month program that's pennies on the dollar. Corporations are about to disrupt the university system, and they're trying to figure out how do they develop their people. And I'm telling you, Business Made Simple is how you do it for $15 a person.
I love it. And I noticed in the PR sheet your firm sent over, you know, it was like a bonus question, you know, about college maybe being a waste of money. And I was going to bring it up if you didn't, because this is something that more and more people, I think, it sounds crazy at first. What? I thought everybody says, like, go to college, you'll make more money, be more successful. When I say, and you know, James Altucher for a while has been talking about this. Scott Galloway more recently is talking about this total disruption now of college. What I say is, like, look, if you can afford it, like not go into debt to go to college, hey, it's a nice, safe place to grow up and experience the world and to learn some things. But if you have to go into debt for it, I don't see it. Like, it's not like, again, you know, the old days. And if you're going to go into debt, you'd better really make sure you've got skills that can be leveraged professionally. Well,
I agree 100%. And, you know, someday my daughter, she will come to me and she'll say, Dad, you didn't go to college. And I'll say, hold on, sit down. Okay, what do you want to do? You want to be a nurse? You want to be a lawyer? What do you want to do?
Right.
And if she says, well, I want to go into business, then I say, okay, well, let's make a business case for college. By that time, it's going to be $250,000, $250,000 to go to school. So let's find out, where do you want to end up? What's your entry level salary going to be? Let's just run the numbers.
Right.
And then you tell me, is that a good investment? Because I'm not down on college. I'm down on bad investments.
That's right. That's right.
And to me, if you spend a bunch of $200,000 to go get a job where you're going to make $45,000 entering into the business professional, you know, career category, I would say, well, you've just made one really bad business decision. How many more are you going to make on my behalf?
Right, right. Yeah, not knowing how to invest the dollars yeah. or the time.
Yeah, the sad thing is most kids are going off to college. They don't know what they want to do. So they it's sunk cost at that point. You're out $25,000 before you even figure out what you want to do.
Now yeah, and people people don't think about that ripple effect, as you said, of delaying all the other aspects.
Compound, negative compound interest.
Yeah. I want to we only have a few minutes left, and I want to go back to one of my selfish questions. Similar to things we're talking about, I'm curious about your own thoughts on goal setting. You know, there's sort of, I again, my background, I was a big believer in, you know, SMART goals and review my goals and very much about that. As I've gotten older, I've become a little bit more like daily habits, daily systems, less yeah. about the specific goals. What are your thoughts about goals?
You know, part of what I created with and when I talk about it in the book is a Hero on the Mission life plan. And that plan has a goal setting worksheet, and it's worked very, very well for me. And there's basically several components to it. The first is you name the goal. Then you answer a question as to why you want to attain the goal. And that gets into the stakes. If I don't attain it, this will happen. If I do, this will happen. So you measure that. And then there are milestones that you reach. So you celebrate paths on the way to the goal. But here's the one that really did it for me. It's goal partners. Mm. And you actually fill out in this worksheet, who's going to do this with me? Not accountability partners. This is not going to my wife saying, I'm not going to eat sugar for a month. It's literally saying, okay, I want to weigh 190. I want to do that in 6 weeks. I'm going to find three or four friends who will do that with me. So each of the things I just named, naming the goal, defining what's at stake, the milestones, those all increase your chances of hitting that goal by like 5%. Actually doing this, you know, having this goal in community and doing it together increases it by another 50%. So, you know, it's dramatically different. And then also processing what you're going to have to sacrifice in order to reach this goal. People think if they write a goal down, it's some sort of magic thing that's going to make attaining the goal easy. You've got to mentally process that there's a sacrifice for a period of time. The only way to attain an important goal is to experience pain. So if you actually list the pain, and then there's a little report where you cross off boxes for 21 straight days when you actually sacrifice for 21 straight days. That goal setting worksheet has been the greatest thing that I've found in terms of reaching goals. That said, Kevin, I'd say I reach 60% of them even with that. Yeah. So they're hard, you know, it's really hard, but I think it's super important. And so to me, that's my process for setting goals. The other thing that I'll do is I'll only set three goals at a time. I won't set four, because if I set four, I won't accomplish any. But if I set three, I'm more likely to accomplish them all. I just don't think the human brain is good at processing more than three really important things.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And listeners, listen to the wisdom Don's spitting here. $15, you get the details of all that, along with all this other content. Part of my learning journey around goals recently, you mentioned the why. And I think too often I was thinking about, oh, I'm reciting my goal. I'm looking at my goal. If you're not feeling the goal, the why do I want that? It doesn't have that motivating factor. And then again, I think I was too selfish early on. I love this idea of goal partners. You know, it's not that I want to accomplish this thing on my own for myself or whatever. I'm going to do it with my son or with my daughter or whomever it is. I just love this spin on goals.
Yeah, it's been super helpful for me. We're working on a piece of software that we hope to have out by the end of the year that will track your day planner and your goals. And it's a system that I created about 10 years ago, and I credit it with a lot of my ability to get things done. It's amazing what happens when you focus. If you're just focused on three things and you remind yourself of those three things every day, it's just amazing what you can get done in 1 year. It really is.
Love that. This software is going to be part of that march to 100 million.
It's going to be free software that we give out with the next book, you know, always trying to create value.
How many more books have you already planned? You clearly know what the next one's going to be about.
Yeah, I've got three. I've got three that I've got to write: The Hero on a Mission, then How to Grow a Business. And then I'm going to write a book called Build the Middle Class and hopefully explain to people how to fix the country. And Republicans and Democrats, it's a platform that they can both support. And hopefully the people will get behind it and tell their members of Congress and senators, this is what we want you to do. The plan needs to come from the people. We've had many, many presidential candidates share their plan, and we're going to be $30 trillion into debt here pretty soon. It's an absolute disaster. It's bad management by both Republicans and Democrats. A plan needs to come from the people. And if the people say, if you're willing to work our plan, we will vote for you, but we don't want your plan. We want you to work our plan. And I hope to write that plan.
When do you hope to have this book out?
Build the Middle Class?
Build the Middle Class.
End of next year.
That fast?
Yeah, that fast.
Good for you. So you're already underway.
Already underway. I've got the logo and the hats and the sweatshirts, but I don't have the book.
I love it. I love it. So, Don, we've been talking about Business Made Simple, 60 Days to Master Leadership, Sales, Marketing, Execution, Management, Personal Productivity, More. The best value I've seen in a long time, $15 on Amazon. Don't just get the book. You get all these daily videos. If they want to find more about the book or get in touch with you, where do I send people?
BusinessMadeSimple.com is the absolute best place to go. But the book, just pick up the book on Amazon. I'll do the rest. As soon as you open the first couple pages, you'll start getting videos from me every day, every weekday for 60 days. And at the end of that 60 days, you and I will be very well acquainted. I promise you that.
I want to thank you for taking the time. Congratulations on the newest book. Again, Business Made Simple. And I want everyone to remember to vote Donald Miller, probably 2023, 2024, Senate, Tennessee, maybe. How's that sounding?
That sounds great to me. I don't think that's actually going to happen, but hopefully whoever's running for Senate will say, I'm with the Build the Middle Class platform and we'll actually execute the people's plan.
Thanks for sharing about the book, Don.
Thanks, Kevin.